You're listening to All Marine
Ready?
Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Minutes after 8 here on the west coast of the United States. If you're a fat man on the east coast, 52 more minutes till you get to throw it down. Joining me is a non-fat man, takes tremendous pride in his ability to surf and to be a good-looking guy, even at his advanced age, and that is Bob Milstead. Bob, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Michael. How are you?
I'm well. It's an interesting morning and an interesting time. Here's a question. I didn't prep you for this, but tough shit. Here's an interesting question somebody just wrote in. Are the monuments on our national battlefields at places like Gettysburg, Spotsylvania, Chancellorsville, Antietam, are they next to go?
Yeah. Well, and first of all, it's not Antietam, it's Sharpsburg, you know,
yeah.
So you know where I was born.
Sorry, you're on the wrong side of that one.
Yeah, you know, and it's Manassas, not Bull Run.
We know.
But yeah, you know, I mean, you know, I wish I had the quote, you know, where I could throw it out, but I think it was, I forget who it was, maybe Mark Twain or somebody that said something. Jim Webb quoted it, you know, that you need to look at people and events in the context of the times. You know, I mean, good Lord, are we going to shut down Mount Vernon, you know, because Washington
nice.
had a couple, you know, had some
yeah,
slaves.
Had
I mean,
slaves.
So I don't know. You know, it's just it's political correctness run amok. I mean, it's a great opportunity, you know, for you to take set your kids down and talk to them about, you know, how we treat people and about the fire that this nation's been through and how we've developed to where we are and how we're better for it, you know? Take all that stuff away and what do you have? You know, I don't know.
Yeah. No, it's and then what you see is you see this toxic cocktail of this screaming fueled by fueled by the national media and then social media, and then you see this out of control thing, and it's I don't know. So anyway, all right, we'll switch gears. Boomer Milstead, as we know him, Cobra pilot, born and raised where, Boomer?
All around. My dad was in the Air Force.
He's in the Air Force, so he was that
so
kid.
So I was born in San Antonio, but lived all over.
Yeah, he was that kid. Dad in the Air Force. What does he do? Yeah, I'm going to be a Marine, Dad. So you know he's not a good son. And flicking his dad's nose like that. And because, you see, my sons are good sons, right? They both joined the Marine Corps. So there's a symmetry around the family. So you see a kid like that, you know the kid's got issues right away. And so Boomer and I have crossed paths in our careers. On numerous occasions. Always enjoyed having him around. Last week we had a conversation. He ended his career as head of manpower and reserve affairs, yes?
Yeah.
I'm still not sure how he pulled that one off, but he did.
No, me neither.
All right. And so.
I retired before they caught on.
they were coming down the hall and I was coming out with my briefcase.
They were coming down the hall, man.
Hey.
I got out the door.
Hey, what's going on, boy?
I made it.
What's going on? Where do you? I'm out.
I'm gone, man.
So, wanted to have you on last week. Well, first of all, the commandant at the end of the week announced a safety stand down, and also we had a pretty interesting discussion after the 31st MU incident with the Osprey about the Hilo dunker, and so I called Boomer and I said, hey, would you mind coming on and talking about both of those incidents? So let me take them in chronological order. The 31st Muse Osprey Hilo Dunker training. First of all, your thoughts. Aircraft in the water. The fact that 23 of 26 getting out is just short of a miracle. I mean, miracles are attached to some other deity, but that number of people getting out when a helicopter, an Osprey goes in the water is pretty amazing. Your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, some people would say it's luck, but, you know, others say luck's where, you know, preparation meets opportunity, you know. I mean, it's, was it training? You know, you briefly mentioned on the deity, you know, I mean, it's, you know, thank God that many got out. But nobody was probably better trained in the dunker and egress training under those sorts of circumstances than the air crew, and one of the air crew didn't get out.
Right.
So, you know, there's always these...
Well, two of them, the crew chief. One was the crew chief and one was the pilot.
Yeah.
But can I just, because I want you to comment on this. We have learned, and there's now, what, oxygen bottles on every life vest.
Yeah.
Could you explain...
The HEADS bottle. Yeah. I think they still call it the HEADS bottle. That's what they called it in my day.
Could you explain to everybody what that is and how important that is?
Well, from my perspective, the biggest positive piece of gear in the training that we have, you know, for people is the HEADS bottle. I think it's unquestionably probably the biggest and the best investment in time, maintenance, money, training, et cetera, because, you know, it's air and it's breathing. And so it gives you an opportunity when you crash and maybe if the airplane starts to roll or whatever, you know, you can take a breath, both figuratively and literally. And take a moment and orient yourself, you know, because I'd offer panic and confusion, that disorientation. Those are the killers. Those are what kills people because they get disoriented. They can't find out, you know. I mean, the training's, you know, find a reference point. And, hell, I've come out of the dunker in ways that nobody ever imagined a man could come out of the dunker, you know. I mean, I was totally disoriented. And, I mean, that sends chills up my, you know, just thinking about going into the water at night, you know, and an airplane rolling. So I think the HEADS bottle, you're spot on. That is the best thing. Because we don't train everybody. Everybody that gets on the back of that helicopter is not trained in egress. And so if a guy's got, you know, it's got a little time to breathe, then, it gives him a little better shot. Over.
No, I would say absolutely. Now, I want to, our discussion talked about, it was interesting, there were Marines that were in crashes that heard the program and then rode in. One was in a 53 crash off of Norway in 1986. The 53 coming in, hits another 53 on the flight deck, and then goes into the water. He said, what you're not prepared for is the violence of the of what happens to you, and I want to say 11 out of his aircraft didn't get out, and
they probably didn't have HEADS bottles.
No, not
back then. They didn't have HEADS bottles. They didn't have, you know, the guys in the back never went through the dunker training, I don't think, back then. And then, you know, off to Norway, you know, even in the summer, that water, you know, the shock to you, that water is very cold.
40,
but I think he's right.
He said it was 42 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you're just not prepared for it. And so, again, I go back to my comment about, you know, confusion, panic, disorientation. Those are the killers. I mean, you know, when you teed me up, you said I'm a surfer. I'm not a big wave surfer. You know, I stand in awe of those guys. You know, that's a young man's sport, but I watch those guys that ride those huge, huge waves. Those guys now are wearing flotation vests, and they have basically a civilian version of a HEADS bottle.
Really?
Yeah, because they get pummeled, and they can get held down, maybe a two-wave hold down, you know, and so it's I think the HEADS bottle is the critical piece. And you said something the other day when we were talking. I mean, if that Osprey didn't roll, then that decreases the confusion and the disorientation significantly, you know. But when that thing hits and it goes, you know, it's not like deplaning at gate 43 when the airplane, the airline, that's hey diddle diddle right up the middle, last guy out, you know. So everybody's moving for those spots, right?
Yeah, it's not a drill. It's not a drill movement on the grinder. It is. And then, you know, the other things are you going ashore for a week and you have your full pack, or are you going for a night and you have your day pack? Now, that's a huge, because when you hit, that stuff goes everywhere and it buries
people. That's right.
And so all those things factor in. All those things factor in.
And stuff that's in the way. You know, I mean, I'll be up front. You know, I don't, you find me an aviator, and of course, you know, we've been at this dunker business for years, the aviator. You find me an aviator that says that he enjoys the dunker, he looks forward to it, I'll show you a liar. You know, I mean, the dunker owned me. It owned me emotionally. I dreaded my dunker training. Especially when they would put those blindfold goggles, they put those goggles on you that are blacked out, you know, and you're going to go down, and then that barrel goes down into the water, chunk, it hits, it bounces like that, and then it rolls, you know, and they say you count to three, and then you start trying to find your way out. I mean, I dreaded the dunker, and thank goodness I never had to use that training, but, right. But, you know, you go to this, I think this whole discussion about the dunker, and you're a father of Marines, you know, so you may look at it a little different than somebody else, but I think there's a distinct, opinions vary, you know, across the spectrum from it's not worth the time, and the question is, there's no question about air crew. Everybody says, hey, air crew, because these guys are in, you know, they're over the water all the time, they're flying. But what about the passenger population, you know, the earthmen in the back? And I think that's where the opinions vary from it's not worth the time to absolutely if it saves a single life, it's worth the time and effort. And so that's the key. You know, you have to look at it that way. I think you just take any discussion about air dunker training, you know, for air crew, and you just push and set it aside, because I don't think anybody would disagree that it's worthwhile. The questions are, you know, what about the passenger population? And then you can get into the, you know, are they assigned to the MEW? No, I mean, do you take 3rd Battalion, 5th Marines that say he's not going to go aboard ships, not going to get anywhere near salt water, for instance, for a year and a half? Do you spend the time and put them through it? Probably not. Do you take the guys going to the MEW? Yes. Maybe.
All the guys?
Or do you do all of them, or do you just do the HELO assault guys?
Right.
You know?
Whose job is it to fly in that thing? But because to me, and here's the issue, and that's one of the reasons why having a general officer on is fun. Not fun, that's the wrong word, is because especially at the rank of lieutenant general, that is the small group of the Marine Corps. And you match assets to training requirements, to revenue, and you're in the business of balancing the big tectonic plates. So the discussion last week, and you know Will Cosentini, Will's a smart guy. Will says, hey, look, I've got to take every guy in my battalion, and I've got to drive them up to Cherry Point, right, and I've got to spend a day doing that, and that's hopefully the dunker works all day. If something fails, then I've got to reschedule it and go back. For something, he said, Mac, what is the probability that anybody's going to go in the water? Total up all those events and then take all the sorties on those MEWs and then tell me what the number is. The number is infinitesimally small. Now, I've got all these other training requirements that I know these guys are going to bet their lives doing, and they're going to do them. And I'm going to take a full day for every person in my battalion to go through this training when there's a zero probability that it's going to happen, and that if it does happen, the primary determinant of whether you live or die is luck, is fate. Just like when something explodes on the battlefield, I often say, the God who governs the flight of metal is a fickle person. I don't usually say person. I use another word that starts with an M, but I won't say it here. And so Will, you know, said the same thing relative to, hey, look, you know, whether you get out or not. And then he used the example of the 46 that went in the water off the coast of Southern California. He said, "Hey, look, those guys are they're the best swimmers in the Marine Corps. I believe those guys were force recon guys. But even if they were battalion recon guys, it's still the same swimming that they're both doing. And they're strong guys. And I want to say 8 of the 16 drowned in that thing. And he said they didn't get out. And he said, so why am I going to, when I have so many more compelling requirements to train to that I'm going to execute, why do I have to go do that? And my response was, hey, fuck you, Will. My kid's flying in that helo, right? How do you not train him?
And yeah, but that's a perspective that you have different now that your son's there. You
that's
know,
my dad's perspective.
Take you back to when you were a company commander, and you'd probably be aligned with Will.
So can you explain to us how we don't seem to have enough dunkers in the Marine Corps, the requirement and the balance point for non-aviation types in this training?
Well, I don't think I can explain it. I think what I can do is just.
What do you mean? That's why I brought you on.
Well,
you're the explainer.
I think maybe
guy.
What I can do is give you a little context. I mean, it's just like anything else you do, you know, as a commander. You know, it's risk assessment. And you know, it's, you know, where do you put your assets? You know, you only got so much and you have to spread it around. And so, I mean, Will has a good point. Now, if Will's battalion is getting ready to do a UDP to Okinawa or they're going to deploy to Afghanistan or something like that, then I'd be completely in Will's camp and I could understand. Of course, that decision would probably be the division or the MEF commanders with some input from the regimental commander. But if Will's battalion is getting ready to go out on 2-2 Mew, well, now that's another, that brings a little bit more to it. And, you know, you may, because everybody, you know, regardless is going to do something, is going to fly somehow over the water if they're on the Mew, regardless of you know, what their actual assignment is. So maybe you do it there. So it's not a one size fits all.
Okay, so who would you make it mandatory for? I just got a text message. Mandatory for the Hilo company who lives on a ship. Are you kidding?
Yeah,
are you kidding me? That's a no brainer.
That's a no brainer. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So they go. Now let me the next step.
And again,
would be,
that's my opinion, but absolutely. I mean, you know, because we're talking risk management and risk, you know, risk mitigation. They spend a greater amount of time over water. But now how about, you know, you're always going to be open or second guest or whatever.
Right.
You're flying the Padre from one ship to another, the Holy Hilo, you know, on Sunday, you know, or moving, or like today, which is a holy day of obligation. I remind you, Michael. You know, today's Feast of the Assumption, so I'm sure you'll be going to Mass today.
You think I don't know that? Are you kidding me?
I just thought I'd throw that in there, you know. But, hey, so you're flying the priest around, and it goes in the water, you know, and the priest hasn't had dunker training, you know. You're going to be open to criticism, right?
Right, yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
But no, it's a no-brainer for the Hilo Assault, you know. But what about the guys, the other people?
Well, to me, it doesn't mean you don't. It doesn't mean you don't train him because, and I would suggest this, we should have, and we have old wooden mock-ups of 53s, right? But there's other things that you can make that are pretty cheap, a mock-up on site where you can take everybody in those things and you can do some training. They don't cross a threshold of needing to go spend a day at the Hilo Dunker. Right, you could send them and it causes you no ass pain, then I say send them. But
let's go back to that Heeds bottle. I'd make sure everybody on the Mew has had one in their hand. They know what it's like. They know where it sits in the, you know, that thing goes around their neck. You know, that little packet. Right. You know, when they get on the airplane. You know, they understand how it works and just, you know, put it in your mouth and breathe. You know, those sorts of things that it's not an alien piece of gear. Anybody. I go back to that Heeds bottle. I think that's the lifesaver. You know, it's not the egress trainer. It's the lifesaver. At night, it's a different story because you're still struggling to find the light. But during the day, if you can, you still can see somewhat, and you know, you just, if you can breathe. I mean, I believe that HEATS bottle is the single most significant piece of gear, life-saving gear that we have. You know,
my guess this morning,
population.
My guess this morning is Robert Boomer Milstead. Email, Mac, where did the nickname Boomer come from?
No, nobody's ever going to tell you that because none of them are complimentary. So, you know, hey, nice try.
Who, where did Boomer come from?
You know, like I said, nobody.
Come on. Give it up. You were named after that dog, weren't you?
Yeah, the dog, yeah.
The dog.
That place.
Come on. Why? Come on. Everybody's got a story behind their call sign.
Yeah. You know, and everybody wants the call sign because when we got ready to start the segment, what were you playing? You were playing the music from Top Gun. You know, everybody wants the call sign. You know, Maverick, Ice. You know, Joker. No, you know.
Okay.
Some of these call signs.
So tell us about Boomer. Where did it come from? Why?
Let's talk about Heads bottles. Let's talk about.
Do I have to go find somebody else who knows where it came from to bring them on to get to the bottom of this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I challenge you.
All right.
How's that?
All right. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Trust me. I'll get to the bottom of that. And when I do, there's going
to
be trouble.
It has to do with my ability to drive a golf ball and navigate by a map. Compass.
I know both are. I know both of those are bold talk from a one-eyed fat man, as Rooster Codburn says.
That's right. So
let me read another text.
And Glenn Campbell died.
Yeah, Rhinestone Cowboy. Yeah. My mom had. Campbell. I'll tell you, Glenn. My mom loved Glenn Campbell, and we had an 8-track in the car. I could sing just about every Glenn Campbell song on the dial.
I had an 8-track. I had an 8-track in my 1976 Cutlass Salon that I bought as a second lieutenant in flight school. It was a Cutlass Salon with a Landau roof, 8-track, you know, put in the Bay City Rollers.
Does it get cooler than that? I don't think it does.
I was dangerous.
Text message. The dunker is not about swimming. It's about confidence, being strapped into a sinking plane and knowing what should be happening next. And what you should be doing next.
That's true.
Yeah, I agree.
That's true.
That. But
yeah.
Again, that little bottle of oxygen is, to me, it gives you hope that, look, I'm going to be able to breathe, all right, which means I'm going to have some time to get my bearing and then do this. And I think that is, I don't know who invented that or when did we start doing that? Boomer.
I think we started. I think my first dunker rides were probably 80s, early 80s. I know I've never been through a dunker. I did the Dilbert dunker, which in flight school you go through. Everybody's seen Officer and a Gentleman. That's right. Different. That's you just slide down, and that's how you get out of a single seat or a dual seat cockpit. But
right.
I don't think I'd never done dunker training on my first Mew, you know, when I went out on my first Mew in 79. 78, 79.
So when
I was
on
the Mew.
When was the first time?
I don't think I'd been through the dunker. I think it was in the 80s. In the early 80s.
The air bottle?
If I recall. Huh?
When did the air bottle come into play?
And I think, if memory serves me correctly, the air bottle came in a little bit later as well. You know? We started carrying the HEATS bottle a little bit later, after the dunker training.
Okay,
it's been an evolutionary... An evolutionary thing, I think, is a safe way.
I'd
ask some of your listeners that are a little bit more maybe current in those sorts of things. Maybe some of them can send you in something. But I think it. We did the dunker training first, and then we moved, and then we got the HEATS bottle. But at first, we didn't have the HEATS bottle. I know I didn't have a HEATS bottle my first. You know, my first deployment was a UDP on Okinawa. My second one was on the Mew, and we didn't have HEATS bottles on the Mew, I'm pretty sure.
All right, here's another email. Hey, Mac, I've never been part of a Mew, and I sure as hell don't know what a HEATS bottle is. Could you explain what it is? You spell it at least, because I'd never...
H-E-E-D-S, I think.
Yeah, H-E-E-D-S. And if you see it, their website is, it's called HEED 3 Submersible Systems Life Saving Helicopter Emergency.
And so what is it? Helicopter, what's the HEED stand for, the acronym, you know, Helicopter Emergency Egress
Device.
Yeah, yeah. And, it basically looks like a, you know, a cylinder, one of those cylinders that people drink their coffee out of, and it's got a rubber mouthpiece up at the top.
Right, right.
You know, and it's
I'm looking at a picture. That's exactly it.
You know, and that's kind of what it is. And for aircrew, it goes in that little pouch that's right in the front of your vest. You know, and then you get in all kinds of things. Like, for instance, you know, in OIF-1, you know, we fought the first 5 days off the ships. So guys are going ashore and they're still wearing body plates.
Right.
You know, so you got a body plate and a HEEDS bottle and a vest, and you go in the water with body armor. So, you know, the body armor goes on the outside, but,
right.
You know, so it's just, there's just, you know, you guys tend to rig the gear a little bit differently.
Right. Well, that's what they do now. They have, when you're in the back with your body armor on, you've got one for the plate carrier, you've got one shoulder strap, unclipped. So you can shed it, and so you're standing by with your HEEDS bottle and going. But again, so do you think, Boomer, as you balance this out, for instance, I'm a bit surprised that there is no helo dunker at Camp Lejeune, that you got to still go up to Cherry Point. Do we have enough assets in the Marine Corps?
Is there a helo dunker at Pendleton?
Yes.
I think you got to go down to Miramar, don't you?
No, I want to say.
Is there one at Pendleton?
Yeah, there's one at Pendleton.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's just like, I mean, well, this has been a discussion of risk management, and,
right.
You know, assets and distribution, and you know, it's money. The whole aircrew piece, you know, that's a function of NAVAIR, I want to say, and NAMI and stuff like that. The requirement for passenger population, you know, for how, you know, to the extent that we have to train the Marines and sailors that get on the back of the airplanes. I think that's I'm not certain of this, but I think that's a headquarters Marine Corps Department, a Navy decision. You know, I mean, that's the Commandant's decision, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's, again, we've been pretty fortunate, and I think luck does play a big piece in it. The training's always a big piece of it. And again, I'll end it the way I started. I think the HEEDS bottle is the most significant one. And it's the one that takes the least amount of investment with time and training, you know.
Let a guy
see it. Let him hold it. Let him have that confidence. I mean, knowing that he's going to be able to, you know, have a few minutes or, you know, have some time to work his way out of that airplane. Because like you said, when that thing hits, the violence, people are trying to get to the door, they're out in the water, and how are they doing it? They're kicking. So you get the guy in front of you, you know, with the size 12 and a half boot upside your head, you know? So.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. And we lost two swimmers in Iraq in 2004. Guys from 2-4, they're scout swimmers. We've been told that there was, and I'm sure you heard, I don't know if you saw these reports, Boomer, but that there were hiding caches of weapons and ordnance in the little islands and sandbars of the Euphrates. So Marines got sent out to check that out. One Marine, while they're swimming, and again, you know, river swimming, ocean swimming, so much different than the pool. It's not clear. You have your head down. You know, you're swimming. It's dark, black, so much different. Anyway, he got behind the guy in front of him, drifted behind him, and then the guy in front of him kicked him in the temple and knocked him out, and he drowned. There is a fair amount. Let me read you one more email, then I've got to take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll talk safety stand downs and the purpose of those. Hey, Mac, I believe, not knowing anything else, but there is two big factors that really, in my opinion, make this a little bit of a watershed event. those two factors are, instead of flying in a 46 or a 53, you're flying in an Osprey, which has the engines over the wings. And so when it hits the water, it shouldn't be rotating upside down, at least as far as I can see. It would hit and it would stay stationary in the water, slowly sinking because of the distribution of the weight. The second piece is that combined with those oxygen bottles. Not going upside down is a huge factor in all of this. And I think that when you combine the two, those guys had a good chance of getting out. I feel bad for the three that didn't. Obviously, thoughts and prayers to those families.
I think that guy nailed it. I think he nailed it. I think, you know, and to go back to what, probably nobody was more trained in emergency egress from an MV-22, both, you know, under duress, than the two guys that didn't get out.
Right.
So that tells you, you know, all the other factors that come into play when this stuff happens. But I think the weight distribution about the aircraft not rolling, again, that goes back to my, you know, disorientation, panic, you know, piece being the killers. Thing just starts to settle into the water. You know, you're a little bit more, you can be a little less panicked in trying to get out.
If I know that I can. Let's see. I was just trying to look and see how much air this would have. It doesn't give a time frame.
It's not the kind of thing you go swimming around in. I mean, it's still time is of the essence.
It's designed to give you a few minutes of air.
Yeah, maybe a minute, 2 minutes. Right. And of course, it depends, you know, how deep you go and whatever. It's just like, you know, a scuba tank, you know. I mean, if you end up 50 feet down by the time you're out of the airplane and you've taken a breath, you know, with the compression of the air, you need to have been trained about how to let the air out as you're coming up to the surface so that you don't get, you know, all the other medical issues, air embolism or whatever they were, you know, like scuba divers have to worry about, you know what I mean? So there is definitely some training to it, but again, it's low overhead and you can bring the training to your Marines with HEADS bottles. You don't have to take them someplace where there's a tank.
The it says duration of air supply, approximately 30 breaths at the surface. So, again, if you were in a situation where you were in and out, you know what I mean? You're in and out. A helicopter's not completely submerged yet.
That's right.
But 30, I will tell you, 30 breaths and you're holding your breath for as long as you can before you take another one.
But remember, people are panicked.
Right.
And when you panic, what do you do?
But you know what?
You breathe fast.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And you breathe shallow.
Right. I'm with you. But again,
so, you know,
I think if you have this, and again, it's a little bit different. You know what I mean? If you have a little bit of confidence that I got maybe 5 minutes of air, and I'm going to be able to get out of this. You know what I mean?
I'm a fan of the HEADS bottle.
Yeah, you never had that. Interesting.
No,
I've learned a lot about it. I didn't know shit about it. Anyway, thank God. I'm going to do a little digging about how the Marine Corps got involved in it. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk safety stand downs. A lot of people think they're bullshit. A lot of people think they're eyewash that we do when something bad happens. So we're going to have a safety stand down. So when we come back, I want to ask you, how do they make sense? And what do you do to make them make sense? So my guest, retired Marine Corps Lieutenant General, Boomer Milstead, and so we'll go to the break with a song that I don't care how much they say they don't like it, they love this song. Tell me you're not bobbing that big size 8 head you got.
Yeah, with the upper bite, over bite, yeah.
He does have a big head, though. All right, we're going to take a quick break. More of All Marine Radio coming up on a Tuesday edition right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Are you looking for the perfect gift for somebody who's in the military? For a first responder? For a hunter? For an outdoorsman? Or somebody that just likes cool military stuff? I've got the perfect gift for you. The Battle Mug. Starts at 10 pounds of aluminum. It's milled, machined, anodized, adorned with Picatinny rails, and then stamped with the serial number, and it's ready for you to make your own. Anything that went on your rifle or pistol can go on your mug. Scope, laser, camera, light. put a lid on it, and you're ready for the field. If you're inside, add a flag and an emblem, and you're set. Perfect for any commemorative event, farewell, promotion, retirement, birthday, anniversary, or get out of the doghouse. The Battle Mug is the perfect unique gift. Check out the entire line of product at BattleMug.com. Enter the promo code Marine for 15% off. Battle Mug is a veteran-owned and operated company. The product is made entirely in the United States. Check it out, BattleMug.com.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Matt, Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com. And I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm an individual member. I joined the Global South Foundation because I believe in what it can do. And I also wanted to stay tied to the community that I was part of.
The benefits for individual members of the Global South Foundation are two things. One is networking, keeping in touch with the community, developing new relationships at any stage of your career. And secondly, it helps people stay abreast and up to date on the latest issues that the South community should be aware of.
The Global South Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All I can say about MilitaryByOwner.com is, wow, I listed my house on your website for only 2 weeks in a tough rental market, and now my house is about to get rented. I will definitely recommend you guys to everyone in the military. Thank you.
Are you located near a military base? Advertise with Military by Owner for optimum exposure to the military community. Military by Owner has experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base for the past 15 years. MilitaryByOwner.com, proven and dependable.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit VeteransCrisisLine.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. On the West Coast. Boomer Milstead, Lieutenant General, United States Marine Corps, retired gracious enough to join us this morning and do a little explaining. So, Boomer, on a serious note, I know I give you a tough time when you come on here because that's what I do and that's what our relationship is based on. But thank you for doing this. A lot of times in the media, we don't get a chance to hear smart people familiar with topics explaining them to us, footnoting them, and talking about the real issues. So appreciate you coming on and doing this.
Well, I'm glad, especially, you know, these are two issues that have, you know, a lot of opinion floating around about them both.
Right. Talk to me about, again, I would give you a grunt's perspective of a safety stand down is roll your eyes and go, okay. But what makes a good safety stand down? The commandant believes it's in order. He said in the next 2 weeks, everybody will stand down for a period of 24 hours. Talk to me about, as a guy who's led large formations of large Marine aviation formations, what makes a good stand down? What makes them make sense? How do you get money out of them?
Well, you know, as an aviator, they've been a part of our life, you know, for years and years and years. You know, I mean, we've been doing safety stand downs, you know, I mean, 40 years in the Marine Corps, second lieutenant in squadrons, you know, and they can go from, as you said, bullshit to, you know, they can go to moneymakers. You know, the first thing when you start talking about safety stand downs, I think it's important to look at, there's two kinds. There's the kind of what I would call the planned. And then there's the others. The planned ones are the ones that, you know, you say, hey, we will always have a safety stand down for 2 days after, say, the Christmas holiday. As a youngster coming up in aviation, mostly the first 2 days after the Christmas split leave, port and starboard leave periods, were a safety stand down, and they called it safety stand down, and you kind of refocus and it could be, you know, a number of things happen. I think safety stand down today, like diversity training or some other words, has baggage. You know, you say safety stand down and people are like, oh my God, they roll their eyes. And then the others are the, those that aren't planned. And those are the ones that can come under some criticism. If they're a knee jerk reaction, you know, you have a mishap and it's like safety stand down. And everybody's like, oh, brother, here we go. Because if it's perceived as a knee-jerk response. I think the way the commandant's done this one is great. That's the way to do it, is to say, hey, look, in the next 30 days, every unit will stand down for 24 hours. And I would hope that the division, the MEF commander or the division commander would not capture that and say, okay, I'm going to tell you how. You know, leave it up to the, I would like to see it go down to the, maybe to the battalion and to the squadron level and just say, hey, in the next 30 days, you're going to stand down, you know, we're going to stand down. You know, of course, the regiment can say within this period, you know, so that he's not, you know, got all his guys spread across, and let them focus on what's important for them. To be a true safety stand down, I think they require some imagination and they require some leadership from the commander, because, you know, after all, who's the real safety officer of any unit? It's the CO.
The CO.
I mean, the CO's the safety officer. So, you know, safety stand downs can be useful, but they require some imagination and tailor them to what's going on. I mean, and you got to get buy-in. You got to do something where you got buy-in from your Marines. Because the last thing you want for your Marines is to roll their eyes and say, oh, okay, here's another safety stand down. This is just cover your ass, bullshit, waste of time. What's the use? We're just going to go back to the same old ways, et cetera. So with the way the commandant's done this time, he recognizes that one size doesn't fit all and that a good safety stand down needs to be tailored, you know, to the individual units. And so he's directed this. And is it a safety stand down or is it an operational pause? Mac, you remember we had operational pauses. We stood the Marine Corps down, across the Marine Corps or NEFs or whatever for things.
What's the difference?
I think the difference is what's the focus of effort. I mean, we stood down for what, 2 days after the rape on Okinawa. Remember? Across the Marine Corps. And the focus was to talk about, you know, what's, and that was like in what, 76, 77? I mean, I was a squadron commander, UDP over there.
Not in 76, you weren't.
No, not 76, 96, I'm okay. Sorry. 96. Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
96. You know, I think that was following the, you know, we've had stand downs for behavioral issues as well as safety. So, you know, sometimes they get wrapped together. But a true safety stand down, you know, it needs to be focused on something, and you need a little imagination. I mean, when I was a...
So walk me through that, okay? Because the thing I like that you're talking about is like, is it going to be bullshit? Well, it sounds like to me whether it's bullshit or not is largely in the hands of the commanding officers who execute that. And so how would you craft a safety stand down to go ahead and make sure? Because again, the Marine Corps is in a tough place relative to aviation. We don't, you know, our readiness numbers are poor, to say the least. Everybody trying hard. Our pilots aren't getting enough hours, which means that they're making mistakes. You know, and it's sad. I mean, when you look at, I want to say the last three mishaps, you have, for God's sakes, you have a Blue Angel who leaves his afterburners off. Which is the primary factor in his crash. You have Major Norton's F-18 gun run, where he starts it too low and essentially drives it in the ground. And then you have two F-18s that go bump. And the primary factor of that is simply the lack of flight time. So this is the backdrop of an Osprey going in the water. And that's the environment that aviation commanders are leading in today. And so I don't think you have to go too far to say, hey, boys, we really got to pay attention to the safety piece of this because of for two primary reasons.
Safety, you know, safety, I've always, and it sounds like it's a pretty bumper sticker, but I've always said it this way, and I truly believe it. Safety is not the focus of effort. It's the byproduct of doing things right. You know, you don't go out and say, okay, we're going to be safe today. No, you say, I'm going to go out and I'm going to do things. I'm going to, you know, whether you're laying in the gun range, you know, you're going to go do some machine gunnery or work your 60s or whatever. You don't go out and say, I'm going to be safe. You're going to go out and you're going to do it right. And safety happens
right.
Because you did it right. So, you know, I always remember, you know, the night before we attacked North, on OIF-1, Amos, you know, in his message, he said something that I've always remembered to us. He said, you know, okay, you know, we've trained the way we'll fight. Now let's go fight the way we trained, you know, because in combat, too many people think, hey, I can go make some shortcuts. No, you've trained to fight one way. Now go fight the way you trained. And I think those were sage, that was sage, you know, direction to us. And we did pretty well. And from an aviation safety aspect. But, you know, when you do this, if you're having a safety stand down because you've had, two guys trade paint in the air, another guy's done, you know, controlled flight into terrain or something. I mean, if you're having air crew issues, then when you do your safety stand down, then that should be your focus. You should use some imagination and talk about, okay, these are the things, and we're challenged even more because, you know what, there's a big difference between currency and proficiency. You know, yeah, I flew yesterday. That makes me current. But the fact that flight yesterday was only the second flight I've done in 40 days doesn't necessarily make me proficient. There's a huge difference between currency and proficiency. And I think you need to take that into, so you need to focus your safety stand down. And I'll give you one example. We're getting ready to go to CACS, and I'm the MAG commander, and And so, you know, the East Coast, we fly a bunch of airplanes out to 29 Palms. And this was before OIF-1. This was like 2001, I think. We were still in Afghanistan, but we had not, you know, started up, you know, getting ready to go into Iraq. And so we're getting ready to go out there. And I've always been convinced that, you know, safety, you know, mishaps, that there's just a single little chain. They're chains of events, and you can break a chain. If you can break that chain somewhere, you can maybe prevent it, and an individual can do it. So I got all the air crew, you know, officer and enlisted, and I brought them into New River, and I put them in the chapel. Because you tend to listen in the chapel. I thought that had the tone, you know, just the atmosphere. And the primary thing that I spoke for 40 minutes about Joshua Lawrence Chamberlain and 325 off, you know, farmer fishermen and backwoodsmen of the 20th Maine and what they did, you know, at Gettysburg. You are the left flank of the Union line. You must hold this ground at all costs. You know, do you believe, as I do, that Chamberlain, a single man, made a significant impact, a strategic impact that affected a nation? I do. And so my point was, individuals can make, you know, a strategic, can affect a strategic chain of events. And so every one of them, and I talked about integrity, and integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's watching, and to do what you know is right, and, you know, shortcuts or taking no place worth going and stuff. I wasn't talking about safety. You know, I wasn't saying you got to be safe, safe, safe. But you see what I mean? I mean, it's just right. My focus on that was trying to ensure that each guy, that they knew that I'd empowered them, that every one of them could say no. I said, each and every one of you can throw up the bullshit flag and say no. That's easier said than done. But, you know, that's what I was trying to do. So, I mean, you just, it takes some imagination and it takes some.
But what you really, really talked about is leadership.
Leadership, exactly. Because again, I go back to safety's not the focus of effort. It's a byproduct of doing things right. And leadership is leading your Marines and taking care of your Marines and doing all those things. And when you take care of your Marines, you're not going to put them in harm's way unless you have to. And again, we're back into risk mitigation and stuff, but you're not going to take, you know, unnecessary risk, and, you know, that's safety. Know your stuff. So, you know, again, we were lucky, we were blessed, we had no mishaps. Is it because of that talk? No, I'm not going to talk.
Well, I mean, but that's a part of it, and so I.
But I would hope that it that right. At some point some guys thought, you know, hey, yeah. You know, I am important. I can affect a chain of events. And when you go back and look at all these mishaps, oftentimes, you can find events to where a single individual could have broke that chain.
Well, you know,
hindsight's 50-50.
Well, it always is. But and the other thing is, there's so much pressure to perform.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I'll just give you a good example. This is a stupid example this morning. I get up at 4:30. Okay, I Jack and I go for 3 miles. A quarter mile into it, right? My body tells me I have to defecate. Now, do you think I went home after I LD? Do you think I went home to do that?
No.
No. You pushed it, right? So
yeah.
I wind up crawling up my front walk, staggering into the bathroom, right? And so. Where does that come from? That comes from, hey, we LD'd. This is on. I'm not,
that's it.
Right? I'm not turning back. And there is, and I'm not going to cheese out of this. Okay, so we're going to, you know, we'll, and again, this is not a good analogy for aviation, but as a grunt, we'll tape this, we'll wire this, and we're going. But it's this mentality is in the Marine Corps that we'll press it, and you've got to be a grown up about it. And you've got to be able to put your hand up and say, this is not pressable. This is unpressable. I'm out. And this is.
Yeah.
Not,
and
that's not easy.
And you know, and that's a, and that takes us back to what we were talking about. One size, you know, one size doesn't fit all. You know, it's got to be tailored to the individual units and, you know, And then it should reflect the reason for the standout, you know? And so the commandant gets some, you know, some general advance, you know, commander's intent. You know, I want everybody sometime within the next 30 days, take 24 hours, stand down, and I want you to, you know, focus on whatever, you know. That's kind of like he's giving you an axis to advance.
Got it.
And then, you know, and kind of leave it up to you. And that's not a bad thing. But, again, it is a controversial issue when especially when it's used, it's perceived as a knee-jerk reflex action. And again, I go back to, you got to have buy-in. You got to have buy-in of your Marines. Otherwise, they, like you said, they roll their eyes. They say, hey, this is just bullshit. This is cover your ass. So come up and, you know, and don't use it as an excuse to do the other things. You know, you got to stand down. So, oh, what a great time to do sexual assault training, do some diversity training, do some all that other stuff that we've put in their backpacks, in their rucks. You know what I mean? So, no, you keep it focused and
you make it make money. Final question.
Yeah, I told you that one time. I told all the air crew, I don't want you coming. We're going to have a stand down, but it's not going to start till 10 o'clock. Nobody comes to work before 10 o'clock. And what I want every one of you to do is I want you to have breakfast with your kids, you know, and maybe take them to school if your wife takes the kids to school. I want you to sit there tomorrow, you know, that morning and take a good look across the table at just who you're going to leave behind if you go out and do some jackass stupid thing or how you may do that to somebody else. You know, focus on that, spend some time, have breakfast with your children, and then get your head, and then we'll come in and we'll talk about, you know, some of the other things that we've had laid out. But I've seen bad stand downs, you know, I mean, as an aviator from a lieutenant all the way, I've seen bad ones to some good ones, you know. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, plagiarism is the greatest form of flattery. So you see something good as an aviator out there listening, write it down, and when you're a commander, use it.
Final question for you, and I'll let you go. And again, I appreciate your time this morning. Are you nervous about North Korea?
No.
Why?
No, I'm not. I'm not. But I think, you know, you can't look at North Korea without, you know, looking at China. And I think China's kind of, you know, Xi Jinping, I think he's done pretty well. And, you know, he's looked at North Korea and said, hey, if you shoot first, we're not behind you. We're not backing you. So basically he said, you know, you're a dead man, you know, because we're not going to support you. And then he's looked at President Trump and said, if you shoot first, we're going to support North Korea. So I think he's kind of, you know, kind of framed the issue. And I think it's just a couple guys, you know, talking shit on the playground. And I'm glad there is that the president has talking some shit, but, no, I'm not worried. And I'm on the West Coast right now.
So you're closer to the point of impact.
Yeah. But no, I'm not. I think this is drama being generated by the media, you know, because the drama is what sells airtime and sells papers. So no, I think the Chinese have framed it pretty well, and they're the key. You know that. Key to North Korea is China.
But they've been standing there with their hands in their pockets for 25 years.
Yeah. And he's told them, said, you shoot first, you're on your own, sport.
Yeah.
So, you know, the guy doesn't have a death wish. Just me thinking. And, of course, I'm no HR McMasters, but, you know, it's just the way I see it.
Okay, one final question. First of all, Dave Furness said to say hello.
Hey, Dave, where is Dave now?
He's in Africa.
He finally broke, you know, did escape velocity after 12 years as OLA.
With no oxygen bottle.
With no heat bottle.
He says this, ask him to tell you about the time he threw me under the bus on a headquarters Marine Corps VTC.
Well, I think he said something. He said something. I think, I can't remember. There was a couple times. It was near him, and he was a one-star, and I was a three-star. That was a no-brainer.
somebody going under the bus, and Furness is a good guy. He can take it.
He's a great guy. He can take it. He's in probably better shape than me, you know. So, you know, just boom, 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 boom. So, but no, Dave was a great OLA, you know, and he certainly paid his dues. So,
tough. He, yeah. He was there for a long time. All right. Sir, first of all, appreciate you coming on today.
Always a pleasure, Mac. Always a pleasure. You know, this was almost as much fun as the time when I called just to see how you were doing when I was driving back from the beach and you put me on the air. Here I am driving.
Was there something wrong with that?
No.
No, it's all good, right?
But it's good on you because these are two issues that, you know, seem kind of dry, but they're very emotional issues.
Not for our culture, though. Maybe for civilians they're dry, but for us?
Yeah.
No, they're huge.
Yeah.
They're hugely important. All right.
And well, thanks for what you do with this. This show is great.
First of all, it's a labor of passion. But, you know, again, I've been able to reconnect with a lot of guys. John Allen's coming on later this week. And so, it's just fun to talk about current issues with guys who you know for a long time, guys that are smart, and then hopefully help Marines figure it out. And then the bottom line is always kind of saying stay plugged into your battle buddies. When you're struggling, reach out. You're not alone. We're still the same tribe we've always been, and so it goes. But thank you very much.
Everybody's got a demon they're dancing with. You know what?
That's why I play the opening theme song is the monster that Eminem sings with Rihanna. I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. I get along with the voices inside of my head. When I first heard that, I started laughing. I said, I didn't know Eminem was a vet. Because we all do. And so just the biggest thing that I tell people is stay plugged into your friends, man. They can sense it. They can sense it in you because they know you, right? They know the smell of your farts, man. You're not getting away from those guys. So,
no, they do. They go, what's wrong? Nothing. Don't bullshit me. What's eating at you? Yeah.
All right. Have a good time, Mac. Have a good time.
Don't forget. Go to Mass today.
I told you. I'm going to Mass. All right. St. Mattress. All right, brother. St. Mattress. Have a good one.
All right. See you, brother. Bye.
There you have it. Boomer Milstead. He's a good dude and had a great career and up visiting grandkids. So my thanks to him for coming on. Interesting thoughts about a safety standout. You know what? It all gets back to leadership, doesn't it? Every time. All right, we're going to take a quick break. I'm late. Alex Hollings, former sergeant, United States Marine Corps, is going to join us. He currently is a contributing editor at SoftRep, and we're going to talk to him about stupid white people that are doing stupid things. So, we'll get Alex's thoughts next on a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio right here on your home for All Marine Radio, and that would be the All Warrior Radio Network. Don't touch that dial.